I'm Carmen, and I'm the community director here at Friends Church. So I called my dad the other day. He was washing the car when I called. So I said, hey, do you want me to call back? He said, no. It's okay. So we chatted for about 10 minutes, got caught up, asked me, hey, you coming to the family reunion this summer? Yes, Dad, I'm coming. Told him a funny story about something that was happening at work. It's good. My relationship with my dad is good. It's fine. We talk once a week-ish on the phone. He doesn't live in Calgary, so I don't get to see him very often. Every once in a while, he comes into town and we'll meet for coffee or lunch. And I'll drive up there every once in a while and we'll get caught up and it's good. It's fine. And then we'll get busy and a few months will go by. But it's fine, right? I think we all have these relationships that are fine. I guess, kinda. That friend you used to be really close to. Or your sister that you only see at family gatherings. Your spouse that you see in the hall and you pass and you never really connect with. What relationship in your life is just fine? Part of why I called my dad is I want to go and visit him in June. There's this event I want to attend in Edmonton. So I thought, hey, I can go up, I can spend some time with him, go to the event, it'll be good. Spend the weekend with my dad. A little bit of background. I haven't spent a weekend at my dad's place in years. So this is really weird for me. So I'm getting ready to call, and I'm getting really nervous, and I'm holding the phone, and I'm starting to shake. This is kind of strange. My heart is pounding. My palms are all sweaty. Why am I so nervous to call my dad and ask to stay for the weekend? This should be normal, right? This is my dad. I just want to come visit. But it doesn't feel normal. It makes me think, maybe my relationship with my dad could be better. What would it look like to have a relationship with my dad where I could just call him up whenever or go visit? What would it look like to have a relationship with my dad that wasn't fine? What relationships in your life are just fine? The phone calls where you chat for a bit and then you hang up the phone and you're like, or the conversations that are shallow and surface and you never really talk about anything. Or when you get that invitation on Facebook, you know that invitation, you get it and you get that knot in your stomach and you're like, I don't really want to go. It's fine, right? Until you see two people in a similar type of relationship. And you see how respectful and warm and caring they are to one another. And you're like, I want that. Maybe we're not fine. Maybe it's your relationship with your partner or your neighbor or your kids. That awesome friend that you haven't connected with in forever. Your grandma, it could be your niece, it could be your coworker. I don't know who this is for you. It could be somebody that you talk to every day. It could be somebody that you haven't seen in a year. But we all seem to have these relationships, don't we? What relationships could you have that could be better than fine? I'm going to ask Cole to put some statements up on the multimedia. And as they come up, I'd like you to think through these statements in terms of one of your relationships. Doesn't matter what it is, any one of your relationships. But ask yourself, could I say these things honestly? Could I say these things truthfully about my relationship?
So this past week, as Carmen was telling me what she was going to say this morning, I remember just kind of listening to her and got my mind kind of Rolodexing through my relationships. And to be honest, I quickly thought about Kathy and I. Last 9 months, I think I've shared around here more recently have been very busy for both her and I, probably some of the busiest ever. All good things. Took on a couple projects, a little bit of work, added loads, said yes to a volunteer position, like just a few things all added up, ended up making life a little miserable. And it's had its effects on us. I didn't really notice it until just a little while ago. Kathy and I were out for dinner. And the place was packed, so we were waiting for a spot in the dining room. So we went into the lounge, and we're just sitting there having a drink. And I looked over, and there's this one couple that was just sitting in my peripheral at a booth. And I just a couple times I looked over, and they are bent over, looking into each other's eyes. And she's telling this story, and he's just into it. And they got their hands out on the table, you know, and they're holding each other's hands. And meanwhile, Kathy and I are texting away, you know. kids are calling, and I'm trying to finish up a couple of emails I forgot to get done. And I look up, and he's laughing. And she's just back, and they're just back and forth. And I, just in a moment, kind of did one of those. One of those. Now, don't get me wrong. We're not scrapping. We're not clawing each other's eyes out. We're not running into the arms of strangers to find love that we're not getting. There's nothing like that. We're fine. Right? Here's a painful piece. We both remember being that couple. And it wasn't like 20-some years ago. I remember actually not all that long ago us having those moments when we're sitting. In fact, within the year, one calendar year, I remember sitting down at Joey's downtown Eau Claire and having the time of my life with my wife. We remember what it feels like to be that. Subtly things shift, don't they? Subtly things just kind of start going a little north or a little south. Strange. Like prior to even that experience where it was just a stark contrast of what we are, if someone would have asked me, how are things? I would have said, you know, good, fine. Like, yeah. I wouldn't have said we were scoring 9.5 out of 10, but I wouldn't have given us a failing grade either. We were doing pretty well. That sobering moment, though, communicated to me that we could be doing better. You know that feeling? Like, that's my story with Kathy and I. I'm betting every one of you have a person that you think, it's not like things are broken, but it just could be a lot better. A whole lot better. But how? Like, where do you even start, right? Like, what do you say? Hey, let's be that, you know? Give me your hands here. Let's try. Like, you know, it's like, it's not. I wish our relationships were kind of like our vehicles. You know, you could just drive them into the shop and the mechanic would just hook up the cable and run a diagnostic and say, oh, here's what happened. And he can tell you exactly when it happened. Oh yeah, you broke this off. You need a little part here. We'll just replace that and we're right back to normal. I wish. Hey, wouldn't that be awesome? Yeah. Over the next 4 weeks, here's the good news. We want to take a stab at doing that. We want to offer some relational mechanics advice. We want to help you hook the diagnostic up to that relationship you're thinking about right now. to help figure out perhaps what's going on. We want to make you aware of some relational tools. We want to talk to some experts. We want to help us diagnose what may be going on in the relationships that may not necessarily even be broken, but just could be a heck of a lot better. We want to take it from fine, just fine, to great. Because I don't know about you, I don't want to limp across the finish line one day. I want my marriage to sizzle. I want my relationship with I want my kids, when they talk about me and our relationship, I want a big smile to come up on their face. I want that with my neighbors. I want that with the people I work with. How about you? So before I jump in here this morning, I just need to say something in terms of where we're going to go to find the tools and the how-to advice to help. Being an unapologetically Christian church community here, weekly we tell stories and we glean from the wisdom and the experiences of our spiritual ancestors that we read about in the Bible every week. We believe that a lot of what we experience today, specifically in our emotional and our relational and spiritual journeys, has in some ways, though perhaps in different contexts, in different time, different place, has already been experienced by our spiritual ancestors many years ago. They've wrestled with similar feelings than we've wrestled with. Similar relational challenges they've wrestled with. One of our core values says it this way. We value the Bible as literature that bears witness to God's interaction with humanity. By that we mean we believe the Bible to be the voices of many who have come before us. And their interaction with God, documented in the poems, the stories, the accounts, and letters of response and relationship, both with each other and with the living God. In order to know where we're going, we need to know where we've been. Looking back helps us see a trajectory of where we're headed. It's amazing how it does that. Now, because we believe that we're not the only ones to have searched for and experienced God, we place a high priority on incorporating biblical narratives and learning into our weekly messages. We believe the Bible, as we read these stories, it can speak to us today to see what others have learned and experienced in their interactions with God. And we don't do this because we have to, but because we believe that their stories will often speak some kind of truth into our own stories too. We'll find ourselves in those stories. In a way, we kind of use the Bible as a bit of a compass. For example, it was John who wrote these words, "Dear friends, let us continue to love one another, for love comes from God. Anyone who loves is a child of God and knows God. But anyone who doesn't love doesn't know God. For God is love." I don't know if there's a better verse that is more clear on the importance, the mandate of living in a loving way. I don't know. I mean, we quote the one that Jesus says, hey, love God and love your neighbor. It's as simple as that. Love is in the equation. It's basically saying if you're living a life, this verse here is basically saying if you're living a life that is loving toward others, you're getting it. You know God. You're experiencing God, because that is something that happens when you're connected to a God who's love. If you can't love, or if you choose not to love, or if at some point you just say, no, that's not what I'm about, you don't get what this is about. It has a powerful way of charting a general direction that just says, hey, if you want to be in on this, it's kind of, that's north. That's true north. You can kind of figure out your path based on kind of that mandate, that direction. The Bible has a way of kind of charting these things. If you look over patterns as you read through the Bible, different, even written by different authors, different time periods, different cultural settings, it has these general flows and trajectories to it, mandates that just seem to keep coming through, pointing us to what matters most. Now, having said that, there are many things that will happen in our lives today that the Bible doesn't seem to address. I'm thinking about the guy who's dating right now, seriously considering marrying a woman who has two kids from a previous marriage. Really loves her. But her kids don't really care much for him. Ever heard this story? It's a common story. In fact, they don't like anyone who isn't their dad. And would be very happy if their mom just stayed away from all guys. So they're like, beat it, guy. He loves her. But should he continue dating? What role is he supposed to play with these? What does it mean to love these kids? Should he? How? What would the Bible have to say about how he is supposed to love them specifically? Think about the woman whose younger sister was just diagnosed with a rare form of cancer, living her only months to live. This is a single mom leaving young children behind. And now the older sister is wrestling because she's looking at those young kids, knowing they have no one else. Likely, they're going to be handed over to social services and given a family. And she's going, no, for me to love them would mean I need to raise them. But her husband is going, we're not ready for that. You can take those kids, but that could tank our marriage. And she's torn. What does the Bible have to say about that? How about the father's son who just came out of the closet as being gay? And he has a bunch of relatives he knows aren't ready to accept that news. And he loves all his family dearly, but he knows how they're going to respond to his son. He knows how actually some people are going to treat his son. And how does he navigate through this? How is he going to love the judgmental people that are treating his son differently? What does the Bible have to say about these kind of things? For many situations like these, the Bible doesn't really contain similar stories or offer any specific advice to guide us in a lot of the challenges we face in our modern culture. It acts very well as a general compass, showing us in broad strokes the direction that others have taken before us when dealing with their specific cultural dilemmas. But it offers very little how-to advice when it comes to a lot of the situations that perhaps you are facing right now. I'm just being straight up honest. That's why around here we would prefer to find the latest research and experts and science to solve the specific how-to stuff and not try to make the Bible say a bunch of things that it's not really saying. Around here, we don't believe that modern science is antithetical to our faith or to the Bible. That's a shift for some. Some people think that science actually is against the Bible. We don't believe that. In fact, we believe that science can complement our spiritual journey and the stories and the experiences of those that have gone before us. Science can actually help us connect with God in better ways. Just in the area of relationships alone, did you know that there is a psychologist who has devoted his life to studying what exactly are the things that cause a marriage to last and the things that will cause it to fail? A scientist. It's a social scientist. His name is John Gottman. Maybe you've heard of him. Psychologist. Notorious for what he calls his love lab. It's not as kinky as you might be thinking. Basically, this is a furnished apartment that's kind of set up like a Big Brother studio, complete with cameras and two-way mirrors. He invites a couple into the apartment where they bring their groceries and they just spend time in there interacting with each other. Meanwhile, he's watching their every move, things they say, how they say things. He's done this with hundreds of couples now. This is the mind blower. He now, with 91% accuracy, can predict whether the relationship is going to last within the first 5 minutes of watching them interact. Isn't that mind-blowing? He's been able to pinpoint certain traits and behaviors that break down in a relationship and ways to avoid them. Now tell me something. If his science and his research could help, if he could give us specific advice about how to love our spouse, our brother, our neighbor, our son or daughter better, would you consider his advice spiritual? Godly? If he could help you love your neighbor better than you ever could before, could it actually be part of God's mandate, helping us, guiding us? You see, around here, we believe he would. We do. Because it leads to an end, an outcome that we believe God has given all of us as a mandate to love more. That's why we hold this value. We value those things that create healthy lives so that we can have a greater impact in the world. We say it this way. We believe that all of life, hear me again, all of life can be spiritual. That our fears, our failures, our brokenness can be restored and made whole. We value the inner journey because we want to be fully integrated people. Mind, body, soul, and experiences, all offered to God. In so doing, we believe we'll be able to make a greater impact in the world that God leads us to. Healthy lives, healthy emotional, healthy relational lives lead to a greater impact in our world, in our relationships, lead to more love, which is a mandate. So, all that to say this, over the next few weeks, we may or may not at some point use the Bible for specific advice on a specific how-to deal with something that we think will help change the quality of your relationship from fine to great. But we don't believe that makes it less spiritual. The measure is ultimately, is it helping you love more? Because if you're loving more, that's the point. Make sense? Okay, let's move on. My nephew Cohen, he is a funny guy. And maybe you've seen him running around here. Such a unique little guy. He's got long blonde hair and glasses. He loves to read, loves to perform. He's going to have a dance recital this afternoon here. I'm just excited to see the little buddy. When Cohen's stomach is full, this is the strange thing. I've been watching him. I've got three boys. And so when I see another boy acting a different way than my three have, I'm going, the heck? So this is what I've learned about Cohen. When his stomach is full, when he's had enough to eat, he's the most docile, fun, easygoing, entertaining little guy you've met. So laid back. He's just a dream. Come here. Come here. And he'll entertain. Like he just, so much fun. But when Cohen gets hungry, he morphs into a different kid. You're laughing as if you've met another Cohen or two. He stops laughing and playing. He becomes serious, even emotional. Starts clinging to his mom and just like he's shutting down. I'll look at Stace, I'll say, is he all right? Is he sick? No, he's just hungry. I'm like, what? Yeah, yeah, he just needs some food right away. And then it's like, and it's like you're pouring water on him. All of a sudden, oh, Cohen's back. I'm like, that is incredible how this works. Experts tell us that we all are a lot like Cohen. But I'm not talking about the physical hunger for food. I'm talking about an emotional hunger, a relational hunger that we have. Psychologists have used this metaphor of emotional fuel tank they claim every one of us has within us that's longing to be filled with love. Did you know that? Like Megan, 13 years old and in the doctor's office being treated for a sexually transmitted disease. Her parents are crushed and angry. Can't stop asking why. Why? Why would she do this? It was in a conversation with the psychologist that it became more clear. Megan shared with the psychologist about her parents' divorce when she was 6, and then her mom's remarriage when she was 10. Megan said she felt she was happy for her mom because her mom now had someone to love her, but she felt that she had no one to love her. That was her take. Psychologist pointed out to her parents that Megan's emotional fuel tank felt empty. It was empty. She'd become a different person. Which shocked her biological mom and dad. In fact, it shocked her step-parents because Megan never went without. They took her on trips. She had nice clothes. If she wanted something, they got it. In fact, there would be some that would say Megan was spoiled. Somehow the people in her life who loved her so deeply missed what she needed and craved most. They didn't recognize that her emotional tank was so empty and that she was going looking for it to get filled in other ways. I think about Harry. Harry's story is a little different now. Harry was a star performer from the beginning when he joined the firm. Outstanding. Every month he was turning in work that made him the envy of his department. In a short amount of time, he had taken his portfolio and increased it so that it was larger than guys who had been in there for 10 years longer than he was. He was a rock star in the firm. Young guy, unassuming, could run laps around everyone. But something began to happen in Harry. Harry's motivation and drive to help the company began to evaporate, began to look elsewhere for job opportunities. His manager, hearing rumors that he had been talking with other firms, he began just throwing money at Harry. Other incentives, talking different kinds and ways to compensate, trying to earn back Harry's loyalty and commitment to the company. But nothing was working. It's like the light was growing dimmer and dimmer. Harry's emotional tank was empty. He didn't describe it that way, but he said, I just don't feel like they care about me. He was feeling no love, not from the company and especially not from his manager. At one point, Harry told a headhunter who asked him why he would want to move. Like, I mean, they're paying you silly money. He says, they just don't care. I'm their meal ticket. I know I'm making them a ton of money. I'm not a number. I'm a commodity to them. Now, listening to that side, you'd think the manager, you'd think the company were these wicked, evil, greedy people. But really, when you start talking to them, they're going, we just can't figure out what is his problem. We are doing everything we can to make him want to stay, to make him like this. They just didn't realize the stuff, the money, the stock options, the material thing. It wasn't what really filled Harry's emotional tank. There were other things he was wanting, needing. Call him weird, but he wasn't about the money. You ever witnessed something like this? Someone who is struggling because they never got the kind of love that they were really looking for? Have you ever witnessed that? I have. I remember the time when Kathy looked into my eyes and says, I don't really feel like you love me. And I'm looking at her and going, You're joking, right? And she's going, I'm not joking. I'm going, of all the things that I'm doing, And I start pointing off, and what about that? And I'm paying the bill, and I'm bringing this home, and I've washed your car. And I'm just like, what do you call that? What do you call that? What do you get? She's looking at me, and she's going, it's just not working. Have you ever felt that way? Have you ever looked around at the people that would say they love you, and you're looking at them and going, and you know that they're trying different things, but you're just going, man, it's... You maybe even you felt a little guilty because you're thinking, I should feel loved because I can see them trying, but it... nothing. Why is that? Experts tell us that each of us is wired up a little differently. We don't all have the same mix of emotional or relational needs. That means that my three top relational needs, the things that really fuel up my tank quicker, are likely different than yours, Wayne. Likely different than yours and yours. Simply means that the exact same loving action for Wayne that just makes it like a $100 gas infusion into his tank might do $3 for me. Something simple like just starting up a friendly conversation with someone. Just that kind of loving action. With my mother-in-law, oh, if I were to call up my mother-in-law and just say, hey, Mom, how's it going? She'd say, Jeff, is everything okay? I know that. And I'd say, I just calling to say hi. She would almost fall off her chair. And then for the next 20 minutes, I'd just be listening. Really? Wow. Huh. Yeah? No way. And she would get off that phone. It would be like she had won the lottery. My father-in-law, however, I would call him, yes, what do you need? I mean, no small talk. It's just like, get to the point. You need me? What's the problem? I'm like, no, Dad, I just called him to say hi. Oh, hi. Nothing. He comes in the living room, hey, Dad, what's going on? It's like, I'm kind of just trying to watch the television here. Okay, great. I'll go back to Mom here. My son Jaden and I can be in one of the biggest arguments. What is that? My mother-in-law has a relational need for conversation. Not my dad. Not my father-in-law. My son Jaden and I can be in one of the biggest arguments. He can be so frustrated about something that's going on. It just twisted up. And frustrated with me, and I can look at him in one of my clearest, best parenting moments, and I can say, Jay, I know how much this is killing you right now, but I gotta tell you, I'm so proud of you. I'm proud that you're not caving over this, and you're gonna do the right thing. I'm proud of you for that. And right in the middle of the fireworks, and all of a sudden, I just see it just pierce right through the hardness. And he just stops and he breathes. I can see the fuel just going into the system. And it's just, all of a sudden, he's a different kid. Now it's like, everything's come down and he's just talking. I'm like, wow. Yet my son Carter, he can be gone for 7 days. I haven't seen him. He's traveling over and I get him on the phone. I am just aching, missing him. Carter, hey, and I just go off. I heard about this and wow, that's so fantastic. And man, I'm so proud of you, buddy, and I'm just loving you. Carter? Carter! Carter! Oh, sorry, Dad. Sorry. Dad, can I call you back? Like, seriously? I'm like, how do you explain that? My son, Jaden, has a need, a relational need of admiration. That is just so stark, especially verbal. Oh, it drops like my son Carter. Doesn't have it. I've watched couples especially couples who are on marriage number two or number three. My parents, we've got lots of experience there. And I watch how this works. And so I'll watch one of them think, oh yeah, I've really got things dialed in. And I mean, they're thinking, man, I've figured out the key to her heart. And really what they're saying is, I'm trying what really worked on number one, on number two, and I'm sure they're going to love it. I watched one guy who has been on the road, and he's thinking, because number one was all about financial commitment and support, they're going out there and they're busting their butt, and they're making money for the first time in a long time. And all of a sudden, they're bringing home the bacon, which was something this guy struggled with for a long time with number one. And finally, he's doing it. And he comes home, and he's just thinking, oh, she is going to be so proud. She's going to... He's like, I don't get it. For the first time, I'm being responsible. I'm paying the bills. I'm delivering. Her top relational need? Surprise. Family commitment. She just wants him to be involved with the family, to be at a kid's soccer game, to be able to sit at home and watch a movie with the kids, just be there and support and have a conversation with the kids and even just look at her in the eye. Struggle. Mm-hmm. And he's mystified. Going, what the heck? Finally, I figured out, no, I don't. If there's one fundamental principle that we need to get home, we need to pound home over the next few weeks, it is this. The thing that will turn we're fine into we're great is our ability to understand and meet the most important relational needs of those people in our lives and vice versa. If there's anything you need to walk away with, it is there's something about a person's unique wiring and what they need to fill up that emotional tank that I got to figure out. I got to get there and I got to do it. If you can walk away with a greater understanding after 3 weeks of what that is, mission accomplished. So let me ask you a question. Do you know? Did you even realize that we're all uniquely different in terms of our relational needs? Okay, let me ask you this. If I was to just kind of point you out and just say, hey, would you mind just standing up and telling us what your relational needs are? And I wouldn't do that. I hope I got your heart racing. I would love you to be able to really think about this for a second. Could you seriously be able to say, my number one, or maybe not my, I'm not sure about my absolute number one, but I know two of them. I know two things that are really, really seem to impact me. Would you know? Let me ask you a question. That person in your life, we got you thinking about earlier, would you know theirs? Would you know even one? Would you say, oh yeah, I'm pretty sure it's right around here. You know the number of times we ask spouses, hey, what do you think his is? We don't talk a lot about this, but we need to. Can you imagine for a second if the people in your life knew you so well that when they went to expel energy and money and time, resources on you, they did the very thing you needed? Can you imagine what that would look like? You know what I think? I think some of us are limping around right now with empty emotional tanks, and we've got to get them filled up. So you got some homework this week. You got to figure this out. You got to, and if you're sitting here and going, I don't even have a clue where I'm going to begin, tell you what, next week, we're going to come back and we're going to hit this hard. No one is going to walk out of here that really is coming in here ready to learn, to figure this out. No one's going to walk out of here with no clue. We're going to walk through 10 suggested, but there's all kinds of relational needs and nuances, different ways that this works. You need to come back next week, and we're going to dive in. And you know what? We're going to turn our fine relationships into great ones. The love that's going to flow in this place, in our families, in our kids. We're going to put smiles. Our employees, our employers aren't going to know what hit them because we're going to get this right. Because you know what? In the end, it's the game. If we don't got this, I don't think we got much. God, help us in this way love better. We're trusting you, God. Show us. Give us the right people and the right ways to teach us so that, God, we can get out there and follow through on the mandate you've given us to love you and love our neighbor. I ask just simply, God, give us wisdom. And may we be intentional in doing it. In your name I ask. Amen. Amen. Shoot, I'm over time. All right, we're done. Have a great week, would you? Would you do this? You can pick up some sheets at the back that lists out these relation leads, just some of them, and you can start doing your homework. Be ready to come back, because next week I might just say, hey, come on, tell us who you are. No, we won't do that. Okay, have a great week.